Now, continue about the friendship.
Yeah, I said that they established, that these refugees established a club. I believe that perhaps council helped them to establish this club. It was under the auspices of council for a while, because I remember them using the old council lounge as a meeting place. Most of these people have remained together in this club and have done quite well.
And have continued to take responsibility for new refugees, have they not? Or new immigrants from there?
I really don't know that, but perhaps they have.
They're a very close group.
Yeah, I think they are. At one point, the Pittsburgh section, I don't know whether they employed her, Zena Saul, or whether she was about the volunteer chairman of Foreign Born, Service to Foreign Born. She was the chairman, that I know.
Right, but ultimately she was paid by council.
Ultimately she was?
Yes,
I'm not
ultimately
sure.
She became paid.
Then in the later years she went to the Federation. And during the war years, or before, I guess it was before in the war years, she was working at the Federation in the same capacity, and she helped through the committee and council and other committees to bring over a tremendous number of people from Germany, from China, if they could get to Shanghai.
Dorothy, Zena was the staff member for council. I've forgotten when she started, but until 1937, at which point
she went to
council's service to the foreign born became one of the five agencies which merged to form
the Federation.
The Federation.
Yeah, and that's where she worked, because I remember going myself many days down to the office on Fernando Street,
right,
processing many applications.
Right.
People who were going to bring over other relatives, and all those documents went through Zena Saul's office.
Right, and in fact, Zena became such an expert on immigration procedures that she was recognized as such throughout the city for all groups coming in. Mm-hmm. She was a resource for them.
She was a really great person, wonderful person.
But she worked for council for many, many years before Federation was formed.
Yes.
Dorothy, what is your opinion of the present Board of Council?
No, I think that the present Board of Council is, without a doubt, the most dynamic and the best informed board that I have ever known. And I have sat on the council board for over 40 years. And so,
probably as far as representation of the Jewish community.
Oh, yes. It's a cross-section of the whole community. And, as I said, an extremely intelligent, fine group of young women. Wait before you turn it on.
Dorothy, tell us about some of your experience in other organizations. We know you were active in the Red Cross in World War II.
All right, I can tell you about that. In July of 1941, I received a phone call from Miss Helen Leovi, who at that time was the chairman of all volunteer services at the Red Cross. It seems that Mr. Gus Oliver, of whom I spoke earlier, strange because he was still the chairman, you see, of the Red Cross.
Oh, from one World War to the Second World War. He was the chairman throughout the whole time. That's why I was so confused.
Called Helen Leovi and asked her to reactivate the women's, the women's branch, I think, of the Red Cross. That it was, he had had reports that it was going to be urgent and he wished her to do it as quickly as possible. This was in July of 41. which I think is one of the most interesting things.
That's right,
of the whole
because
story.
Pearl Harbor
wasn't
until
December. And he already knew, and he reactivated the whole thing at that time. So she called me, and at the time that she called me, I was floored because I couldn't understand why she would pick me out, where she would get my name. I asked her, I said I would need time to think this over. First of all, because I knew that the Red Cross, and I must put this in, up to that time had had a reputation extremely anti-Semitic.
How do you correlate that with Oliver's chairmanship?
I don't know.
Was it the Red Cross locally or the
Red Cross nationally and locally? This was what they said. Now, whether, you know, you never know what, although I think that this was probably true. After all, really, Gus Oliver was the chairman. I mean, I don't think he had any feeling.
Well, that's why I asked.
But I think primarily the women who had something to do with it. It wasn't until a couple of years or a year later that I knew many of the men who were on the board. Anyway, and Helen also was president of the Junior League at that time. And so I really was all the more confused as to why she had called me. So I asked her, and she said, it's a long story. And then she proceeded to tell me that Gus Oliver had said to her that in the First World War, a young girl had been his volunteer secretary, and her name was Dorothy Hast. And if she could find a Dorothy Hast, he would think it'd be a good idea to ask me to be her vice chairman. So she, realizing that the Junior League and the Pittsburgh section of the council had always worked together, as they did, thought the best way she could find out would be to call the president of the council, which she did. And the president, of course, was Lola Schoenfield at that time. And when she called Lola, she said to her, do you know anyone by the name of Dorothy Hast? And Lola said, very well indeed. And Helen said, well, I don't know what her name is now. And so Lola told her and gave her my name. And that's how she came to call me. So I told her I would have to think it over. I would have to talk to my husband and perhaps someone else before I made up my mind. And then I would want to know what the job entailed. So she said, well, it's really very urgent. Do you think you could make up your mind by this evening? This was around 10 o'clock in the morning. And I will call you this evening, and if you will please do the job, I'd like you to come down to the Junior League headquarters tomorrow. Well, at the time, first of all, my knowledge of what I thought the Red Cross stood for, and the fact that she was the president of the Junior League gave me a very peculiar feeling. At that time, my husband was in Columbus, I'll never forget it, and he had left that morning, was due back in the evening, so I called Dr. Freehoff, and he told me to come down, and I went, and we discussed it. And he said, I think it's the greatest thing that could happen to the Jewish community. I want you to take it and do it. And he said, the very fact that they asked you means that they really want to get Jewish people involved, which of course was true. And he said, there's just one thing I want to tell you. Don't do too much talking for the first few months. Let them come to you. And I said, I realize you're right. And I went home and I waited until my husband came home. And he gave me exactly the same advice that Dr. Freehoff did. So next day I went down and I met her. And it wasn't 10 minutes after we met that we both felt as if we had been friends all our lives. You know, sometimes people just hit it off. That's the way this works. So we laid out our plans, and she was then in the process of getting chairman for all the committees, the motor corps and the home service and the staff assistants and the nurses' aides. All this had to be formed because there was nothing, just the home service. That never went out of existence because they were the ones that when there was no war, took care of disasters.
Local fires and things.
All those. So we made an outline and we set it up, and she went about getting the chairman, and then she called the committee, and the first committee meeting was at the Pittsburgh Golf Club, where it was a little difficult for me to swallow all this, but I did.
And because the golf club never accepted Jews.
Oh, no, not to this day. At least as far as I know, not to this day. Well, anyway, I went, and they were quite a group of women, very nice women, apparently. I was the only Jew, always was, on the entire committee. There were a lot of Jewish workers, but nobody else on the committee. So we set up a staff assistance course. That was the first thing. And we all had to take that course. So Helen took it, and I took it, and all the committee chairmen took it. And really, it was amazing how little those women knew. Not that I knew so much, but I had done so much organization work by that time that I really knew the answers to most of these things. How you talk to people. Of course, typing and that sort of thing came into it a little bit, too, and filing and all those things. So we set up the course, and that was July. In September, we had the first staff assistance course. So we had a group of about 20 women who were really ready to go to work by the time December the 7th came. And
How large a group was that now?
Well, that was the first staff assistance class, about 20.
That's what
they were almost all chairman or vice chairman of committees. Mm-hmm. The motor corps had been set up. The nurses' aides had just started. The blood bank would started about in January or February after that December. It was a colossal organization. And by the time it started, it really was rolling. There were 6,000 volunteers in the Pittsburgh area. That's a lot of volunteers.
And you were?
Well, I was the vice chairman of all volunteer services for a year. During that year, Helen Leovi took on the chairmanship of civilian defense at the same time. And at the end of the year, she came to me and she said she could not continue as the chairman of volunteer services and civilian defense. Would I please take it over? And I said, Helen, it's not up to you to ask me. And if you did ask me, I wouldn't accept. This is Gus Oliver's prerogative. But I can tell you this much, he's not going to ask me. And if he did ask me, I would refuse. Why? She couldn't understand that. Well, I said, I think it would be very bad for the Pittsburgh community as a whole and for the Pittsburgh chapter to have a Jewish woman at the head of all volunteer services.
Now, why did you think that?
I knew it would be bad because the people had not yet accepted Jews as the heads of community organizations.
This was 1942.
Look, that's over 30 years ago. Our Jewish organizations, naturally, but a non-Jewish organization would have suffered in having a Jewish chairman, and I knew that. because I felt the pulse of the whole organization and the community. Now, we had many Jewish workers in there by that time, many of them. And the chairman couldn't have been nicer. As a matter of fact, I did forget to mention one thing, which I think should be told. The first 6 weeks that we were in the Wabash building working, all the chairmen went out to lunch together. And for the first 6 weeks, every day was the same business. At 12:30, we would go to the Duquesne Club for lunch. I couldn't ever sign a check. Helen would sign it for me, and I would reimburse her. Maybe that's the doctor. So at the end of the 6 weeks, same thing happened one day. That Helen came up and some others, come on, we're going out for lunch. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going. Why not? I said, well, I cannot go to the Duquesne Club for lunch when I know that I am not welcome there. So they all stood there aghast. Why aren't you welcome? I said, that's rather a foolish question. You know why I'm not welcome? Because I'm Jewish. They never heard of such a thing. Helen's going to ask her father, Mr. Leoby. She never heard of such a thing. I said, well, you ask your father, and I'm quite sure he'll tell you the same thing that I've told you.
Who is Mr. Leoby?
Frank Leoby. He was a banker here, one of the wealthiest, foremost bankers. They lived on Beechwood Boulevard near the Mesta House. Nice people, lovely people. Well, anyway. So.
Except for a little flaw.
Yeah. Well, Helen was never like this. She really was wonderful. So they said, all right, just a minute, about 10 minutes. I said, go ahead. I'll get lunch somewhere. About 10 minutes later, Helen came back with Pinky Bell and somebody, one of the other chairmen, and said, we're not going to the Duquesne Club. I reserved a table at the Women's Exchange, which at that time was on Stanwyck Street, across from Horns, remember? And that's where we're going. And from here on in, I have reserved the table for the duration. Well, that really touched me more than, well, I can't begin to tell you. Here were about 12 women giving up where they had always gone because I wouldn't go there, which I thought was pretty decent. So now we're back to the chairmanship of the volunteer services. And I said to Helen, you can ask Gus Oliver tomorrow if you want to, but I'll make you a little bet. You are wrong, and I am right. So the next morning, about 11 o'clock, she came in. I was at the desk looking very downcast, and I said, Helen, I was right, wasn't I? And she said, yes. But I think it's terrible. I said, don't think it's terrible. I told you I wouldn't have even accepted. And I said, I know Gus Oliver. And I know that he thinks as I think. He's looking out for the best interests of the organization. We have work to do. We don't want any dissension in the ranks. And there could be. Well, she can't understand that. I said, well, let's try. So, about half an hour later, Mr. Oliver came in, and he came up to my desk, and he sat down. I'll never forget it. He said, Dorothy, I've known you since you were a little girl, practically. He said, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in all my experience, and I've had plenty of hard things to do. But he said, I'm sure you understand, because Helen told me what you said, why I am doing this. I said, Gus, I don't even want to discuss it. That's how much I understand. I said, I will. He said, will you remain? I said, of course I'll remain.
As
he said,
will
you remain as vice chairman? And I will ask Mary Hare, who at that time was the chairman of all the nurses' aides. That was before Rosemary Casey took over the chairmanship of nurses' aides. He said, I'm going to ask Mary Hare if she will take this job, if you will remain. I said, I promise you, I will remain. And he said, in addition to that, do you think you could take on another chairmanship? And I said, now what? He said, chairman of personnel. I said, personnel for 6,000 volunteers? He said, well, I'll give you plenty of staff to work with you. I said, well, I don't know, Gus. I'll try. I don't know if I'm either capable or physically able to do it, but I'll try. Well, I was there for 4 years.
And this was full-time, was it?
Full-time,
from 9 to 5
every day, Monday through Friday.
And not
and sometimes
paid in
on
anyway.
Sundays. Oh, no, that was never. Cost me a fortune, which
sure.
was all right, because I took my car down every day and back again. And there were many expenses, lunches every day.
4 years.
4 years. And I would have been there longer. Oh, I forgot to say one thing, which I also was very touched by. They elected me to the board
of the Red
Cross. Of the Pittsburgh section, American Red Cross. First woman who had ever been put on the board. And the only other Jew who was on that board was Edwin May at that time. I don't know if there are any on now or not.
That May Drugs?
May Drugs, sure. Edwin May. And he was on the prison reform board, too. And he was very active in certain communal things, and this was one of them. And I was on that board until I got sick, and I had to leave the Red Cross. I had a hysterectomy. I'd been going for, well, I don't want this on the tape, so we won't discuss this. But anyway, I had to leave.
What year was
well.
That?
Well, I started in 41 and I'm 45, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was really just about at the end of World
just
War II.
Just about at the end of World War II. And I didn't go back. And I resigned from the board. Of course, it went on, you know, for a couple of few years after the war was over.
You mean at a rate of 6,000 volunteers?
Well,
I mean,
maybe
that high
not
rate.
That many. They mm-hmm. didn't have to have the blood bank,
mm-hmm.
but they still had nurses' aides, they still had home service, mm-hmm. they still had the motor corps. But I didn't go back because I really wasn't physically able. I was worn out.
Oh, that's a tremendous job. Dorothy, how did you handle the chairmanship of personnel?
Well, I had about 3 women. Volunteers, not paid, none of
when
us were
When he talked
ever
about
paid.
Staff, he still meant volunteers.
Volunteers.
Right.
I could have had a secretary or someone like that, had it been necessary. And we had the personnel cards of every volunteer. You see, the volunteer services was one thing. People who came in and wanted to be put into a particular service, that all went through personnel. In other words, the interview with each person, and then to the follow-up to make sure they were in the right job. And then if they weren't, to be changed. And then if they weren't any good, to be fired. And it's not
how did
easy
you do
to
that?
Fire a volunteer.
How did you do that?
Well, it had to be done. Not often. One of the worst ones was a Jewish woman. She was one of the worst. She never forgave me, which is all right. I don't want to speak evil of her, of the dead, and she is long since gone. But anyway, that was personnel. Now, the actual services was the setting up of the services and seeing that they were run properly and conferring with all the chairmen and doing all that. And, of course, I had to sit in on all those meetings, too. Because if Mary Hare wasn't there, then I had to take over. And I formed quite a relationship with Mary Hare, too.
Did you?
A wonderful woman. You see, it's all my fault that I have not kept up with some of these women.
Mm-hmm.
Because occasionally I meet them. I met Emily Oliver so many times. This was Gus's sister-in-law. And we used to go to parties at each other's houses. All the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that there was no social involvement.
Mm-hmm.
There was.
Mm-hmm.
And they would meet me on Walnut Street. Dorothy, I haven't heard from you in so long. Why don't we ever see you? Now, originally, they did try, and I have to give them credit. But I just couldn't do it, Frieda, because the minute I left that and I was well enough, I went back into the Jewish organizations. I became chairman of all nursing service at Montefiore Hospital, where I was for 9 years. I went back on the council board and did all kinds of things. Well, you can't do everything.
That's interesting.
And so, as a result, since I went back and tried to do everything with the Jewish organizations, I could not keep up with the other. And I couldn't keep up with them socially. First of all, I really felt it would become an imposition. And I've always been reticent on that score. I've had a lot of non-Jewish acquaintances, some friends, but I've always had a feeling, I can't stand the feeling that maybe, just maybe, they might, I'm being tolerated. I can't take that. Now, they didn't ever make me feel that way during those years. But what would have happened afterwards, I wasn't willing to take
when,
the chance.
When you were no longer active
That's
in their
right.
organization.
I was. Beverly Shriver called me any number of times. Wouldn't I come back? Would I have lunch with her? I never did.
Now, when you were
right
having
or wrong,
a...
That's my fault.
When you were having the social relationship with the husbands?
Oh, sure.
So there was no
Men
problem
and women.
There.
Yeah. We used to have parties on Sunday afternoons. In fact, I had one at home when we lived on Inverness Street. And by that time, oh, we were 50 strong, at least, including the husbands.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this party. I don't think I've ever had a party quite like that. It was the day, you know, they used to set aside a Sunday. It was called Red Cross Sunday. And we'd have services in a church. And then the entire Red Cross Corps would march on a given street, wherever it was. And so on that Sunday, I arranged to have the party after that service. And so they came around 4:30, 5 o'clock. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were still there. You know, those people could really drink like fish. I mean, they drank, and they had a ball.
Were the other parties till 3 in the morning, too?
No, no. But they were good parties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, I always said it was all my fault that I didn't keep up. I could never blame one person. As a matter of fact, Helen Leovi's sister, what was her first name? She was married to a Stanley. I can't remember it even. When she died, she left me the most beautiful pair of silver compotes that you ever saw. I mean, this was the relationship. We used to have dinner at the Leovies all the time. So there was no feeling, and there was no reason for me ever to have had that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gave it to me. Yeah. But I think I just realized I couldn't burn the candle at both ends. And you can't be all things to all people. And I felt I had given 4 years, and I wanted to go back to my own organization.
Dorothy, did you have, were there other overall community organizations that you played a part in?
Well, the hospital, I was on the board for years, Montefiore.
Montefiore, I'm
and chairman of the nursing committee for 9 years. That was a tremendous
job.
I was there 3 days a week.
How about the general community?
I have to stop and think. Of course, I was on the sisterhood board, not so long. I got resigned, only because I couldn't. There were too many things at one time. I never was on the Federation. Oh, yes, I was on the Federation, the Women's Committee Board, in the early years. I didn't get back on the Federal Women's Board until 2 years ago.
Any other non-Jewish organization?
I'm trying to think.
Ever active in Girl Scouts?
No. No, I don't really think so, because The Red Cross was the primary one.
And such a tremendous one.
Tremendous one. And then the hospital. You can't do much more than that. And at the same time, I was working in Castleboro. You know, I always had some job there.
I should say you were one of the leaders of council ever since I've known that
organization. Well, not anymore. Now I sit back and I listen to everybody else. And I realize I'm an honorary member, and I'm glad to listen. If there's something that doesn't strike me the right way, all right, then I say something, but not ordinary.
I always remember you as the bulwark against whom any new idea had to undergo the most rigorous test. I mean, you really listened. You spotted all the possible weaknesses, and you discussed every one of them.
Oh, yeah. But now I leave it to the younger people, because, first of all, I think they, and I don't mean this modestly or in any way, I feel they know a great deal more about it. I'm serious, Rita. They do. They know a great deal more than I do. Just sometimes, like the old members of the Senate, where we have to have checks and balances, that I will put in a little check or balance if I think something is drastically wrong. But other than that, I don't say too much anymore. It's better that way. Now, Sarah was at the board meeting today. You turned this off.
No. Dorothy, you've been active on the Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute for some time. Tell us what it is and how you got on it and what your contribution has been on it.
Well, the Pastoral Institute started, I think it was around 10 or 11 years ago. There was originally a pastoral counseling unit in Washington, D.C., and the one in Pittsburgh was modeled after that one. There are not very many of organizations like this in the country at this time. As far as my getting on it, and I can go into what they do a little later, about 8 years ago now, I received a call from Dr. John Bays, who's the rector of the Calvary Episcopal Church, asking me if I would care to sit on the board of the Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute. Not knowing what it was at that time, I asked him to send me a prospectus or some letter that would give me some information as to the work that they did, which he did, and which I found extremely interesting and decided to go on the board. For the past year, 2 years, I have been the first vice chairman on the board. The chairman, when I went on as vice chairman, was Father Skoulas. He is no longer in the city, and Dr. Bays has now taken over the chairmanship. Prior to that, I was the secretary for a year, and prior to that, just a member of the board.
How large a board would this be?
Oh, at that time, I guess it must have been about 14 or 15. And by the way, Dr. Halperin, Herman Halperin, was, I believe, one of the original members of the board. I think he helped to found this organization because he was a clergyman, and originally the board was made up of, oh, I would say 75% clergy and 25% lay. But his interests were always in this sort of thing and in anything that had a non-sectarian flavor to it. He was a great help, and they were very, very fond of Dr. Halperin. They really looked up to him. Since I have been on the board actively, and of course I'm now on the executive committee as vice chairman, I have found that they have spread out into many different fields. many too numerous to mention here. The original reason for their being, let's say the raison d'etre, was that apparently some of the clergy in the city felt that they were not able to give the proper counseling and advice to their congregants. This was the original purpose, that they could go to seminars and the classes. I'm talking about the clergy now, and non-sectarian. Every sect and every church in the city was contacted and asked to become a part of this as far as education was concerned, not from the psychiatric standpoint at first, but from the purely religious standpoint and the knowledge of how to talk to their parishioners.
Were they getting professional?
Oh, yes, because right from the beginning, the Institute has had a staff of professional counselors, psychiatrists, social workers, people in the PR field, public relations field, and they have a very big staff today and a very fine staff. The psychiatric staff is headed up by Dr. Moses Wodnicki. Is it Moses or Moshe? Well, whatever. They have many professional people on their staff. Now, what happened was that when they sent out this invitation to the clergy to attend the seminars, those that played the greatest part in this came, of course, from the Catholic Church. At one time, I think there were something like 60 or 70% priests from the Catholic Church availing themselves of the opportunity of really studying how to talk to their congregants. Then the rest, of course, were Protestants of different denominations. Practically no Jews. They have never availed themselves of this opportunity.
You mean the rabbis?
The rabbis. Even
very
today.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
I think one we had last year, I believe.
Are the rabbis enrolling in courses in counseling at the universities instead,
do you think? I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is that this is a great opportunity and they're not using it. I would like to explain about these courses and seminars as they were presented. First of all, the clergy made application to attend the seminars. The seminars could have been, I think there were two different kinds of seminars. Those that were run by counselors per se, and those that were run by psychiatrists, so that they got both kinds of counseling. And then they got spiritual counseling, social work counseling, if that's what you call it, and psychiatric counseling. For this they paid the nominal amount. This was not free because the Institute had no money. They paid for that. After they had completed their course, they then were supposed to go back to their congregations and tell their parishioners that anyone who would like counseling in any field, they should feel free to come to their minister or priest or rabbi, and they would do the best they could. If after a time they found that they could not handle the problem, then the Institute set up a group of psychiatric counselors who were able to counsel with the congregant or the parishioner himself. In other words, if the clergy couldn't do it, then the other ones took over. The Institute took over.
It really is a wonderful development.
It is. It's a great development, and it has proved a boon to so many people. If you could hear Dr. Gross speak, he is the director, by the way, of the Institute. Sometimes he tells stories that are unbelievable of what has been accomplished for many, many people. Now, of course, they have spread out. A couple of years after they started, they went into the prisons. And I don't know if you know what the grubstake program is.
Yes, on the South Side.
Yes. Well, they
describe it, Dorothy.
No, I don't need it. I can't describe it as well as you probably could describe it. I know that they worked with the inmates of the prison to try to do whatever they could for their betterment. And I think many of them were drug addicts. Many of them were in there for even petty offenses. And I think they were very instrumental, from what I gather, in being able to not only to help the convict himself, but to get him out of there and on parole. I don't know if I have all of the things that the Grubstake program really did. Now they are, there have been many